This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On the ABC Listen app.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
The conversations that are important to you. In your town, your suburb.
This is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt.
Do you have a child who has needed a speech pathologist and maybe you've found it too difficult to get an appointment or too expensive to access one? Speech pathologists help in all sorts of areas, everything from stutters to types of dyslexia. Well, now some of those services will be included in Medicare rebates, and we'll find out more about that in just a moment. But how has speech pathology helped you and helped a child in your home, and has cost been a barrier?
On 774 ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Rochelle Hunt.
So speech pathology services will be included now in Medicare rebates for young people. You have to be under the age of 25. So as of Sunday, this changed, and it includes things like stuttering, speech sound disorders, which is very broad, maybe cleft lip or palate. You'll all now be eligible for rebates, for assessment and for treatment. So how will this work? And will it help you? Catherine McKinlay is the National President of Speech Pathology Australia. Catherine, I mean, I guess let's start with what speech pathologists do, because it's actually really quite broad when you may need the services of a speech pathologist.
Hey, thanks, Rochelle. It is very broad what we do. So we work with children and adults, so right across the lifespan from small babies to older adults who have communication or swallowing support needs. One part of what we do is probably not very well known. So not many people would know that we work with people with swallowing difficulties, which can be caused by a range, can be caused by stroke, could be caused by being born too early, premature. So we work with people with communication swallowing difficulties right across the lifespan.
Wow. I mean, that's such a specific area, isn't it? And when you think about swallowing difficulties, we think about people later in life, and we know foods, for example, have to be changed in aged care, but it's not necessarily something you think about for younger people. When you say communication needs or communication difficulties, that's really broad, isn't it? It could be anything from stuttering to a type of dyslexia. So how do you know if a speech pathologist is someone that you should be reaching out to, if it is a condition that might come under the banner of speech pathology?
When I try and explain it to people, I think about communication in its broadest terms. So understanding what others are saying, being able to read and understand what you're reading, being able to express your needs and wants and ideas, you know, really clearly, and being able to write. So that full breadth of communication, and language and speech and voice, and social skills. So that is the breadth of what speech pathologists do and work with anyone who has a communication difficulty across those range of areas.
We're going to have a chat with a mum in just a moment who, sure, I guess, will touch on the social skills that you just mentioned there, Catherine, because that's a bit chicken and egg, really, isn't it? If you're talking about someone who may have an issue with their speech and communication, and then as a result that would impact your social skills and snowball to a certain degree.
It certainly could. And I think, you know, it depends on that individual and what impact it's having on their ability to participate and engage in life. And that might be in school, in social settings, it could be in the work environment, at university. And so really what speech pathologists do is work with that individual to support them to participate as fully as possible.
This, and look, I cannot fact check this text in the slightest. I'm not sure what type of research they're referring to. However, there is a message that's come in, and I'm going to generalise it, that says there was some research done that proved that speech pathology when it came to preschool was unnecessary, that the issues just resolved themselves by school age. Is that, I mean, I don't even know where that information came from and whether or not there's any fact in that at all. But is there a presumption of, oh, don't worry about it, they're young, it will just resolve itself? And could that be problematic?
Yeah, that's not what a speech pathologist would say. So our messaging out to, you know, families and parents is, if you think that something is not quite right, then trust your instincts. Sometimes some speech sounds are normally developing, where kids might say tap for cat, and that might resolve over time. But sometimes there are things that do not resolve over time, and that individual will need the support of a speech pathologist to improve their speech, communication, language.
This message, and this is, I guess, where you can work through some of the changes, because cost is often a barrier for people. And some tutors, for example, if your child needs a tutor, it's a speech pathologist that is going to be helping them, especially if it's a type of spelling issue that they may have or speech issue that they may have. Catherine McKinlay is with you, the National President of Speech Pathology Australia. As of Sunday, there are some changes to those under the age of 25 to be able to access speech pathology and get rebates through Medicare. So, Catherine, there's a message here that says we've just started our, in inverted commas, journey with our speech pathologist. Our almost three-year-old has a pronounced stutter, just shy of $300 per session, with only an $80 rebate under the new Medicare scheme and recommended weekly sessions. This is a huge expense for us. Even though we're on a relatively high income as our family, I'm not sure how others do it. We can barely afford this ourselves. I guess, what's your reaction to that text? Is this out of reach for most people financially?
Look, speech pathologists do set their own fees for their services, and there are a range of different ways in which people can access speech pathology services. So there are some publicly funded services through, you know, public hospitals. There are services through university clinics. There are obviously lots of private clinics as well. There are services that are part of schools too. And this change to Medicare means that for the first time, children and young people under 25 with stuttering, speech sound disorders and cleft lip and or palate are eligible for rebates for assessment and treatment. So prior to this, they weren't included in the M10, as part of the M10 group. So whilst we're really excited about that change, and it means, you know, it is over a lifetime, so it is 28 sessions over a lifetime, that we haven't received any Medicare rebates for speech pathology services. So I think what
this
I would like to emphasise, it is a first.
Yeah.
Does it go as far as it needs to go? Look, probably not, but it's a start, and it puts speech pathology as part of primary care, which we see as a really positive step forward for the profession and for people who need our services.
Are you happy to stay with us, Catherine? We've got some calls I want to get to, and I've got some texts as well. I've got this message that says, I have two primary school kids, both with a speech path. Each fortnightly session with each child is $210, over $800 a month for many months. I'm looking forward to the rebates. Wow, gosh, it's a lot of money, isn't it? Catherine, stay with us, because John's in Nidri. Good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to tell you about my experience. I'm a bit older now, but in the late 80s, I did a speech pathology training thing at Royal Melbourne Hospital, run by some speech pathologists informally after hours. We just had to flash our Medicare card, and it was over a number of weeks. They took us through a program called Smooth Speech, and it changed my life. I mean, I was working in local government at the time, and it meant I could get up and speak at council meetings. I could... with confidence at do phone calls and things like that. And now, I mean, I'm a regular caller on the ABC because they ring up to practice. Because I think, you know, and so I think it's, and that was Medicare. It's that stopped, and now it's come back and done the full cycle. So I think it's a wonderful thing under Medicare. And
How did it change your life, John? Hand on heart, when people talk to me and ask me, you know, what are some of the most impactful moments of my career, I remember doing a conversation hour on stuttering, and it was off the back of the then President Joe Biden and how he openly spoke about stuttering. And when he took that moment to speak to the little boy who was living with a stutter, and I swear it was some of the most emotional and powerful radio I've ever done in my life. The people who called me, who talk to me about how stuttering has impacted their life in some way. So how did it change your life once you got that help?
It changed my life because it gave me the confidence to speak with, because it wasn't just the speech therapy course, it was the whole gamut of social interaction, confidence, and all that sort of stuff. Now, there was people there who had come through their whole life being held back and a lot of anxiety issues and introverted people. Look, I'm an extrovert, so I've got that, that flaw, I suppose. But it changed my life. I could just speak with confidence like I am now. And I don't get bothered about how I sound because I don't care. But at the end of the day, it just gave me a lot more confidence.
And then all of a sudden you become a regular caller to 774 ABC Melbourne. John, thank you. T's in Braybrook. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Really good. What did you want to share?
So we are currently going through fortnight sessions for my 2.5-year-old son who has a speech delay. And we thought we had to get onto it right away. We acknowledge that it is a huge expense, but there is evidence to show that if we get onto it between 2 and 3, that it speeds up or it really helps them rather than wait until that primary school age and then we're at a massive disadvantage. So the speech pathologist has given us strategies to help him communicate and so that he's not frustrated, and we use sign, and that's a really big thing until he finds his voice.
Yeah, and I guess it would help things like maybe even wanting to go to school or play group or and the stress it would take off you, T, as well.
There is. Right now he's saying home when he goes to daycare, so he's very clear that he doesn't want to be at daycare.
That sounds about right.
But we're noticing very small changes. It's adding up to a big change, but the speech pathologist, we know it's a long we're in it for the long haul.
So that's an expensive long haul for you, T. These rebates, will that make a difference to you?
Yes, I got an email about it, and I'm so glad that it's being spoken about today because I've just been meaning to ask, you know, how do we go about applying it? And also, is this similar to the EPC programs that the Medicare have provided in the past?
I wish you all the best, T. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Catherine McKinley is with you, National President of Speech Pathology Australia. Like with T, you know, to be able to work with a speech path early on, you know, when they're 2, 3 years old, when you've got that gut instinct of, you know what, I think this is not quite right. How important is that?
It's really important. We know that the first 5 years of a child's life are critical. So much happens, so much learning happens in that time, and speech and language development. So it is critical for families and parents if they notice that something doesn't seem quite right, if their speech is delayed or they're having, they think their child is having trouble understanding them, then to, I guess, jump on it and go and chat to your GP, paediatrician. You actually don't need a referral to a speech pathologist. You can ring someone up. You do need actually a referral to access these Medicare rebates from a GP or a paediatrician, but otherwise, you know, you can phone a speech pathologist and book in.
We'll have a chat to Emily in just a moment, but this text, I mean, there's just so many different ways to look at where speech pathology fits into somebody's life. My grandson, born profoundly deaf, began speech therapy at the age of 4 months. Then at 7 months before receiving cochlear ear implants, I believe this set the groundwork for his communication, his confidence and his understanding of language. He's now 8 years old and he enjoys such a rich life. Cheryl's in Ocean Grove. Good morning, Cheryl.
Hi there. Look, I think speech pathologists are an absolute godsend. My daughter was diagnosed as a failure to thrive at 6 weeks. They put her into hospital. We had a speech pathologist who helped us to manipulate her mouth to get reflexes, to get her to suckle. Then at 6 months, she couldn't eat solids, so we had to learn how to do that. Then at 2 years, she ended up with this incredible stutter. And we then found out she had a submucous cleft palate. Now, we were doing weekly physios with this pathologist, and she was so brilliant. Now, my daughter doesn't stutter anymore. She's got a brilliant profession. She speaks in front of people. But without that and those weekly sessions, and this woman who also picked up on her lack of skills and she signed her in. So my daughter was also profoundly deaf at three.
Gosh, and so that probably wouldn't have been picked up, Cheryl.
It wasn't picked up until she was two. But as I said, it was the speech pathologist who gave me confidence. Mm. And we were doing, I was doing half hour sessions every day to help her. And without that therapy, we would have been so lost. Her stuttering was incredibly, incredibly bad. She couldn't speak.
Did that impact her confidence and her socialising?
She was watching everybody, so she wasn't that impacted. But she was a very intelligent little girl. So she just kept quiet. But I think she became very confident because of this pathologist and the way she treated her and gave us confidence to give her confidence.
Oh, Cheryl, thank you. It's really wonderful to hear that story. But again, Catherine, it comes back to being able to afford it, doesn't it, and access. So hopefully these changes, even though maybe it's not as much as people would hope or for as long as people would hope, it's still a step in the right direction. Let's bring in Emily, who's been listening to this and waiting so patiently. Emily, you probably have been nodding along here because your daughter Isla had a stutter at, I think, the age of 2.5 years of age. Have you been listening to these stories and I guess thinking, yep, that sounds like my story too?
Hi, Rochelle. Yeah, I have been, and it's all very relatable and it's all very relevant. My daughter Isla began stuttering at about 2.5. So we immediately sought after some speech therapy, and we were told to come back in 3 months just to see if it had sort of rectified on its own, which it didn't. It got worse. So then Isla completed 2 years of speech therapy, again for just under $300 a week over 2 years, added up quickly. And then our son Thomas, who is a little bit younger than Isla, he started stuttering at the same age. So now we're in the midst of speech therapy with him as well.
So that would be, my gosh, so expensive. You've got two kids in, you know, needing treatment.
Yeah.
Not everyone would, and a lot of people I could imagine wouldn't be able to afford that. So when you heard about the rebates, how helpful is that going to be, Emily?
Oh, it'll be huge, especially, you know, with having had both kids in speech therapy at the same time, we were spending nearly what you would on a mortgage repayment a week.
Oh, my goodness.
Just so that our children could speak fluently. It would be huge and so big for other families as well. Thomas still has at least another year of speech therapy ahead of him. So, yeah, this rebate can't come soon enough.
So you probably would have picked up on Thomas's speech issues and conditions as a result of Isla's? Like, were you sort of tuned into this now?
Absolutely. But my family also has a strong history of stuttering and going right into adulthood as well. So it was really important for us to jump on it as quickly as we can, especially considering speech therapy is most effective under the age of six. And, you know, Isla's therapy took over 2 years for her to become fluent. Didn't want to really waste any time with Tom.
Yeah. And Emily, just finally, lots of people you know, texting in saying the exact same thing. Some saying don't stutter at all now. Some saying, oh, you know what, when I get stressed or if I'm really tired, it does come back in some way. Is it always, and I'll ask Catherine this in just a moment, but is it always kind of there? Like, is it always below the surface somehow?
Well, with Isla, not so much. Sometimes if she is tired, it might come back a little bit, but it usually resolves, you know, within a couple of days. Whereas Tom is just constant.
Yeah. Does it stress him out?
It's more frustrating for him, especially he's in three-year-old kinder. So I've actually witnessed kids trying, Thomas trying to speak to other children. And because it's taking him so long to actually get the word out, kids are losing interest in what he's saying, which is no fault of their own. It's just normal three-year-olds. However, Tom's then, you know, kids are walking away from him and he hasn't even had a chance to say what he needed to say. Yeah, it was horrible.
Oh, that just shows how important this work is. Emily, thank you. And thank you for speaking so openly about your kids as well.
No, that's okay. I think it's really important that, speech therapy's changed, especially Isla's life. Huge.
Emily, thank you. Just finally, Catherine McKinlay, the National President of Speech Pathology Australia, under the age of six, that's what Emily was saying, it's just so important. Is that right? Is to get in young, is that super beneficial? And all of a sudden, those 28 sessions, you might actually be able to make some really good inroads in that time?
Yes, early intervention is critical. So we know that if we get in there early and make a difference, that it makes a difference. And so we would always say don't delay. And I just think from the callers, the people who rung in today, that's been their experience, that getting in there early, it does make a difference. And yes, sometimes, you know, around stuttering, people might have disfluencies that continue on when they're stressed or tired. But many children will develop fluent speech that they'll be able to take into adulthood. And we also, as John rang in earlier, you know, we also work with adults who have, you know, stuttering or disfluency too.
And gosh, we all fumble when we're tired. I can barely string a sentence together when I'm tired myself. Just finally, Catherine, so if people are listening and they think, wow, hang on, we use a speech pathologist. I wonder if it covers us. I know it doesn't cover all areas of pathology. It doesn't cover speech pathology. It doesn't cover all ages. Where's the best way for people to get information?
There is information on the Speech Pathology Australia website. They can speak to their speech pathologist about whether they're eligible, and they could also speak to their GP. So we've done lots of campaigning and letting people know about these changes. So you can also Google them as well, because if you are eligible, you will need that referral from a GP or specialist to be eligible for those rebates.
Are you expecting it to be available for older people or just under the age of 25?
It's up until the age of 25.
Yep.
For people who across any age, there is some eligibility under the Chronic Condition Management Plan through Medicare too, and that's 5 sessions a year. So there is still something that's been in place for a while, and that's across all age groups.
Look, I could speak to you for hours about this. I think it's so important. It's such incredible and interesting work that you do as well. Catherine, thank you.
Thanks, Michelle. It was really lovely to hear all those stories.
It really was, wasn't it? Absolutely. Catherine McKinlay, National President of Speech Pathology Australia. Coming up in about 10, 15 minutes' time, we're going to look at memoirs. Do you read them? Do you believe them? What's the difference between a memoir and an autobiography? But up next, we're heading to the High Country where Warwick Long is.
On 774 ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Rochelle Hunt.
And up in the High Country, you will find my friend and colleague Warwick Long, of course, host of The Country Hour, coming up on your regional radio in around half an hour's time, but always on the ABC Listen app. Was this is day 2 for you to be up in the beautiful High Country. I know you've been visiting Swifts Creek, but what takes you there, my friend?
Well, I'm broadcasting to you right in the middle of a cattle sale at the moment, Rochelle. This is the only I'm the only person who can give you this kind of thing. Well, actually, I mistimed it. I thought I was going to talk to you a bit earlier. So now we're going to be surrounded by buyers and probably a little bit of auctioneering in a few minutes' time. But that's okay. We can deal with that, can't we?
Absolutely we can. So why, I mean, this is day two for you to be at these cattle sales. Why are they so important?
This is an iconic part of the higher reaches of our state. It's a huge driver of the economy of a lot of the little towns up here. It's a big social event for a lot of the small towns and communities up here. It's a yearly event where a lot of people get together, and it's a little bit different this year because there has been so much rain. Everyone's swimming through liquid mud at the moment to walk in between all the pens of cattle that are being sold around us, which is a good news story too, right, Rochelle? Mm. So we've had this, the Mountain Cattle Sales is an annual event. It's been going, I think, nearly around 90 years in Victoria's high country, and it's where the calves are usually sort of mustered up off a lot of the mums from the hardy cattle up in the high country, unique sort of types of cattle known for doing quite well in difficult environments because there are a lot of steep hills up here, a lot of different types of grass, and a lot of hard living for these animals.
Mm.
And they all come together and mustered up, and they're sold off, and people will buy them from right around the country to go and help their herds wherever they are. So it's a big indicator for how much cattle are making in this country. It's a big indicator for what's what the cattle industry is doing, and it's just a big catch-up. You see the pubs. Monday night at the Omeo pub was the busiest place in Australia, I reckon.
I feel like you and I have been to the Omeo pub at some point. if we've been on the road in regional Victoria and there's a pub, then Wos and I will find it. It sounds like you're in the middle of one of the pens there, Wos. Are you safe? Are you?
Yeah. Everyone's just wandering around us. You might have some auctioneering happening. So the young bloke's just brought over the microphone here. We've got the all the agents lining up to sell a few lines. You might have a bit of Joyce, he's just tested his microphone. Here we go. Can you hear that?
Yeah.
Speaking of speech pathology, how's this? So he's selling some cattle here behind us. So there's one bloke talking very fast, yelling at everyone. There's a lineup of hundreds of people leaning on the rail with their hats on.
And there's about
five other blokes. There are numbers in there if you can pick them. There's about five other blokes ready to point. There's a couple of people here with, notepads writing down what prices they are. And look, they move quickly. They're already moving away from us to the next pen. So you've got to be quick. You got to keep your hands to the side.
Your hands down, Wos, right? My dad did that once, accidentally put his hand up in an auction and bought a vase that he didn't want for my mum. But
if I buy any cattle today, I'm sending them to you. They're Hereford cattle at the moment today. The white-faced red cattle, known from the high country. So that's what they're getting rid of today here too. So, yeah, it's a massive social event. You should see it. The amount of people around here, the cars, there are more cars in Benambra right now than there are buildings. It is absolutely jam-packed. And, it's muddy, it's wet, it's starting to rain on my head here. But this is part of the action of the high country.
Yeah.
This is life in the high country. And my hat, I'm wearing a cap.
I was going to say, I don't want to stereotype, but there would be some impressive hats there today.
Mate, there are ones that are bent in shapes that I never thought could exist.
Well, you can hide small children underneath them, right?
Oh, yeah. Or beaten up so much that they just almost look like they're flat guttering, like a balcony going off people's heads. And you just know a car's driven over that hat at some stage in someone's life. But, no, it's beautiful. It's great to be here, Rish. And it's a real
honour. It's going to be a great program. Wos, so just quickly before I let you go to get ready for your show, there's a couple of things I want to talk to you about. So I know you've been up in Swifts Creek as well.
Yes.
Now, Swifts Creek is a timber town. There's lots of talk around, once we stop logging, what happens to that particular town. You've been in and out of there. How is the town transitioning into that next phase?
Well, and there's a really great ABC online story from about a week or two ago. People should go and check it out too. But it shows you how hard life is in small regional communities when economies change. And Swifts Creek, timber town, not a lot in it. And when something big like that happens, it can be really hard for the economy to recover. And that shows you why things like cattle is so important, and the high country sales are so important to people at the same time at something like this, Rish, because without it, these communities can really struggle. And we have had a move away from native timber harvesting in Victoria, and that has meant huge change to how the logging industry works in a lot of these high country communities. And people who still talk to you about, quite angry in areas up here about those changes and what it means. They also want to talk to you about fire management and things like that, and the management of wild dogs as well. They're a very unique set of issues facing people here, and I suppose the story of timber in Swifts Creek is a story of communities feeling like they're either being left behind by government or not being listened to in a greater, wider debate that's bigger than themselves. And that'll happen, you know, when it comes to things like cattle, and that'll happen with things like fire management. It's like how they're listened to is really important for communities like this.
And just finally, Woz, I know just recently when you go from cattle yards to ice cream factories, mate, you have got the gig. But you and I were talking about how a lot of ice creams now can't call themselves ice cream because there's just literally not enough buttermilk in the ice cream to actually be cream. You would have seen today there's big changes to using the word milk happening overseas in the UK. There's now been a court ruling that an oat brand of milk can no longer use the word milk. Is that going to give the dairy industry here just a little more sway in changing some of those plant-based milks to not use the term milk?
They will certainly hope so. So the dairy industry, big industry in Australia, big agricultural industry, has been shrinking, but has been looking to try and get better ownership of names like butter, like milk, like cheese, and elsewhere in the cabinet, feeling like a lot of the alternatives, especially as food science has got better, make these products in a big way and then market them off the back of well-known sort of, you know, efforts from the dairy industry. So their argument is things should change. The interesting thing in Australia that we have that the UK doesn't, so this is a Supreme Court decision in the UK saying Oatly, which is a brand that markets itself quite aggressively in the UK as sort of anti-milk milk, if you know what I mean, but uses the term milk quite freely, that they couldn't continue to use the name milk. And the dairy industry has had that argument for a long time. But you know what we have a big lot of and a fast-growing industry in agriculture in Australia and in Victoria is the almond industry. Mm. And they make a lot of almond milk. And I think if there's ever a fight in Australia on the idea of the name milk, the almond industry, the rice industry, and yes, the oat industry, because there's a lot of alternative milks out there, will have a lot to say. But the dairy industry...
a bit
industry,
more money now, right?
And a lot of money. The almond is a fast-growing industry with a lot of big investment, and I'd imagine they wouldn't take a court decision like this lightly. And as you know, not all court decisions go along the lines of who's got the deepest pockets, but it certainly plays a part in the world of, you know, corporate, legal actions. So,
yeah, that's right. Yeah, and whether or not you feel like it's not necessarily a David and Goliath situation, it's just a Goliath and Goliath situation.
Yeah. So. And it depends who has the stomach for that fight, right? So we'll have to wait and see. But yeah, the dairy industry, a lot of farmers have said to me, have you seen what happened with that milk over in the UK? So you get a lot of people wanting to see change there. What the appetite is, I don't know. But as you and I said, Rish, ice cream has a terminology in Australia. You cannot call yourself ice cream unless you have 10% milk fat in there. And if you go and pick up your favourite brand of ice cream, whether it's on a stick or in a tub, it's unlikely to have that in Australia. There's only a few brands that do. So,
do you know how many people I've told that to now? Like, I tell everybody now. People are heartbroken, excited, disappointed, angry. There's a range of emotions when it comes to discovering whether or not your favourite ice cream is actually ice cream or not. Hey, Woz, it sounds like you need to get yourself into position there.
I've got a lot of beef farmers wondering why I'm talking about dairy right now around me, Rish. So thank you for that. I'm going to try and mend a few fences.
All right, mate. Go get yourself a hat.
I shall.
See ya. Warwick Long, he's from the cattle sales as we speak at the moment up in the high country. So for our regional listeners, you can tune in, and he was after midday, but you can always listen to the Victorian Country Hour on the ABC Listen app as well. Coming up in just a moment, years and years ago, over a decade ago, I spent some time with Sir David Attenborough in the butterfly enclosure at Melbourne Zoo because he was working very, very hard to save an insect that they've now found out in their native homeland.
on 774 ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Rochelle Hunt.
And if you've just joined us, we've been talking about some of the changes to your Medicare rebate if you're under the age of 25 and you want to access a speech pathologist. And what we've learnt is there are a range of conditions that you might need a speech path for. Sidra's in St Kilda. Good morning.
Good morning, Rochelle.
What did you want to share?
So I'm a classically trained singer. I'm an opera singer. And I used to see a speech pathologist in sort of my earlier days of my training to help me with my singing. And I just wanted to sort of mention the relationship that speech has with singing. And speech pathologists are wonderfully equipped to help people, especially in the early stages of their singing development, to actually improve their voice. Absolutely.
So in what way? Pronunciation or how you move your mouth? Or I'm sort of doing crazy mouth movements now, but how do they help?
In so many ways. So singing classically, well, any type of singing really, but particularly classical singing, always comes back to the purity of speech and how well you can articulate your words. So of course, speech pathologists help with a range of different types of things, but with relation to singing, they can help people be able to really enunciate words properly. And especially as a young person, if you find that it's difficult to pronounce things or really perfectly articulate things, it can be really, really challenging to actually try to sing. So that's what speech pathologists can help with, as well as a whole range of other things.
Wow, so many questions for you, Sidra. So you're a professional opera singer?
Yes. Well, recently I'm in the early stages of my career, but yes, I am a professional opera singer.
Wow. And when did you decide that this is what you wanted to do?
Well, I started in musical theatre.
How good is musical theatre?
Oh, it's just the best. I still love it. And when I was cast as Annie in my school musical, I had my first singing lesson. And in that singing lesson, I was introduced to opera. And from then on, I just sort of ran with it. I just thought this is the greatest thing. And I sort of switched almost. I still do a bit of music theatre, but it began there in my first singing lesson.
Wow. And it all started at the school musical.
It did. Yeah. Yeah, it did.
That's so interesting. Sidra, thank you. I guess depending on your age, not that I want to ask you your age, but I just wonder whether, are you under the age of 25? Will you be able to access this rebate?
So I am under the age of 25. I'm 24.
Whoa, get in there quick.
I'm 24. I honestly, you know, at the moment, I'm not in need of a speech pathologist, but when I suppose if I found that I had challenges that come up with my speaking and my singing in the later stages of my career, I would absolutely go to a speech pathologist to sort of help adjust my singing. And so, look, at this time, I probably won't need to go.
But if you needed to, you could.
Yeah, and I will refer my younger students absolutely now with this new rebate as well.
So great to hear from you. Gosh, the range of people who need access to a speech pathologist or would like it, and if cost is a barrier, hopefully, we know it's only 28 sessions over the course of a lifetime, not even a year. However, something is better than nothing. Sidra, thank you. This is interesting. VJ says speech pathologists also work with members of the trans community to help them with their changes to their voice as well. VJ, thank you. Another area that I just hadn't thought about. Well, it is World Wildlife Day. So Ewan Ritchie, Professor of Wildlife Ecology and Conservation at Deakin University. Happy World Wildlife Day, my friend.
You, Rochelle.
I couldn't think of anyone else who I'd want to wish this day to, right? And it has to be you because you live and breathe now wildlife. But I wanted in particular to talk to you about the Lord Howe stick insect. Now, I think it was about 12 years ago, Sir David Attenborough came to Australia as almost like an ambassador for the Lord Howe stick insect because they, you know, are critically endangered. And myself and about 10, 12 other journos sat at his feet in the butterfly enclosure while I've never seen journos shut up for so long, to be honest, and had this beautiful stick insect crawling all over him. It was so important because it's not cute and cuddly and fluffy, right? It's not something that people necessarily think about. but there's been some great news for the progress of this endangered species.
Yeah, that's right. It appears that they've actually found some more on Ball's Pyramid, which is a really sharp, sheer island that's about 20 k's offshore from Lord Howe Island. And that's actually where they were originally rediscovered. They were thought extinct, but they were rediscovered back in 2001. But for those that know the story of the Lord Howe Island sticky insect, it's actually really important to get new individuals. And that's because the entire captive population that's been bred up, both at Zoos Victoria, through huge amounts of work by people including Ron Cleave, working really hard, but they've been spread around the world, but they're derived from two individuals, Adam and Eve. And, of course, there's a real issue there with their genetics. And so finding new individuals and potentially adding them to the captive breeding population is a really big deal. So it's the wonderful positive news we need for World Wildlife Day.
Absolutely. What a great birthday present. Can I, like, the rangers who found these insects, and I think six or eight of them were taken back to be a part of this captive breeding program. Can I ask a stupid question, though, Ewan? I mean, they're... They sort of camouflage into their environment. How obvious would it have been? They were doing some weeding, apparently, and then found them. Would it have been really obvious what they'd discovered?
I mean, yes, it would. I mean, I'm sure they probably have their eyes out for these animals. They're quite large for anyone that's seen them. They basically can, you know, fill your entire palm. So quite a large stick insect, beautiful glossy black colour. So I think there's really sort of nothing that you would mistake this animal for should you come across it. But they are nocturnal as well. So they're pretty cryptic animals and they live in groups, communities in the vegetation. So basically, unless you sort of, I guess, stumbled across them and disturbed them during the day, as it seems it has happened here with weeding, or you're out at night and you happen to come across them. Yeah, they're not the sort of animal that you're going to see particularly commonly.
Are they still listed as critically endangered? I'm presuming
yes.
Yeah,
they are. Yeah, their numbers are still well below, what we would like in the wild. And, of course, if we had, some sort of event that occurred, particularly on Ball's Pyramid, that could wipe out the wild population, we're really lucky that we do, of course, have, you know, quite a healthy population now at Zoos Victoria in Melbourne, but also at other locations around the world. But as I said, you know, that's based on two animals. And so we want to be adding genetic diversity to those populations around the world. And, of course, there's also plans to reintroduce them to Lord Howe Island itself now that they've successfully declared that area rodent-free.
Yes.
Yeah, 2023.
How? Are we just talking like mice and rats or?
Yeah, so black rats and house mice are the two that we were sort of, I guess, you know, worried about. And that is, of course, why the Lord Howe Island stick insect was wiped out in the first place. So basically a ship crashed into Lord Howe Island, or just off Lord Howe Island, and the rats swam ashore, and they then just turned up with no real predators on the island, no mammal predators or rodents, and they basically ate whatever they felt like, bred up in really high numbers, and basically ate the Lord Howe Island stick insect out of its home on Lord Howe. Luckily, as it turned out, of course, there was some on Ball's Pyramid, but that's been declared rodent-free since 2023, and they've had all sorts of people doing work looking for signs of rodents, including running around sniffer dogs and conservation dogs that basically can sniff out rodents. So we're fairly
confident.
That's
incredible.
It is. It's a massive achievement that everyone should be really
proud
of.
The image, though, of rats swimming ashore, you know, sounds like some twisted cartoon movie, you know, where the rats find an island to live on and they eat everything up. Has this ever been done before where a space is declared rodent free? And does it just take another ship to crash?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. So, there's obviously been other places where we have removed invasive species, you know, whether it be rodents or cats, but it's really hard to do. And, of course, the larger the, you know, island, the harder it is to do. And the other thing, of course, is that, as you just said, we'll have to be eternally vigilant because there's a barge that comes, regularly to the island to bring in supplies for the locals that live on the island. And then, of course, there's tourists and so forth visiting with boats as well. So quarantine is obviously of the utmost importance to make sure that rats never manage to make it back onto the island.
Ewan Ritchie is with you, Professor of Wildlife Ecology and Conservation at Deakin University. We're talking about the Lord Howe stick insects. Some park rangers at Ball's Pyramid found a little family of them, so to speak, while they were weeding. Why are they important, Ewan? Why does it matter to ensure that these critically endangered stick insects do not become extinct?
I mean, I would argue that all species have a right to exist. You know, whether they have some sort of ecological role that we can identify or not, the fact of the matter is that the vast majority of species on Earth have been around a lot longer than we humans have, and they have just as much right, of course, to exist as we do. So I think, you know, they're obviously really special. They're large, they're spectacular-looking insects. So as you said earlier in the sort of the interview that, you know, we often think about, I guess, the cute and fuzzies and so forth, but maybe not so much about the insects. And these are remarkable animals, but I think really at the end of the day, we should be conserving all the amazing wildlife that we live with. And I often sort of use the analogy that when you walk into sort of museums or galleries and you see, you know, unique pieces of art that can never be created again, that is species that have obviously been created through evolution and natural selection. They're one-offs and they're special and we should take care of them.
So today, given that it's World Wildlife Day, Ewan Ritchie, how will you be celebrating? What will you be doing?
I think just kind of reflecting on just all the extraordinary, wonderful wildlife we have. It's a bittersweet day in some ways because, you know, I love wildlife and ecosystems and the environment, but of course we know the battles that we're facing as well. So I think being really grateful for these positive stories and the many wonderful people that are fighting really, really hard to try and improve, you know, the situation for wildlife and ecosystems in Australia but also around the world. So being really grateful for those people as well.
And just noticing the wildlife in your area, even if you're in suburban Melbourne, it's there. You know, it's all around
Absolutely.
You. And it's lovely when you tap into that. I've been doing kind of no listening walks to be able to take in my environment. It's so nice.
Yeah, and we're so lucky in Melbourne. We have extraordinary wildlife in and around Melbourne, you know, wonderful bird life, lots of mammals, that, you know, fruit bats. We have platypus, you know, in and around the city, echidnas, you know, water dragons. There's all sorts of things that you can see if you just keep your eyes and ears tuned in, as you're just saying. You know, there's wonderful wildlife that you can see.
Ewan, always good to speak with you. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Ewan Ritchie, Professor of Wildlife Ecology and Conservation at Deakin University. We've also been talking about the changes to what you can call oat milk. You can't call it that anymore in the UK, and whether or not we will see our dairy sector follow suit. What do you think? Is it something that's important? Do you think that just dairy should be able to call itself milk or butter? Durell, I think it is out and about. Good morning.
Oh, good morning.
What do you think? Like, I mean, Woz and I have spoken in the past about ice cream not being allowed to be called ice cream if it doesn't have enough buttermilk in it, and it's called, you know, icy dairy confectionery, but we still call it ice cream, don't we?
Yeah, I suppose so, but we know what we're eating.
Yeah. What do you think about the whole plant milk debate?
Well, it's white, but I'm just thinking we need to come up with some other terms like almond crush or oat squeeze, or you can use words like extract or hug of almonds or pop of oats or squash of or pulp or mash, but not milk.
Not milk.
Milk is mammalian.
Do you drink any of the alternatives, Duriel?
No, I don't. I have tried them, but I'm lucky enough that I do prefer milk.
Good to get your thoughts on this. Thank you. I know it's something that our breakfast team were discussing this morning, all the different alternatives and what you can call it. If I didn't get a chance to read out your text on speech pathology, thank you for sending it through. I always do try and stay back and read through as many of them as possible. This one says, my daughter was recommended to see a speech pathologist whilst in grade one. I had a problem with pronunciation of f and s and spent months doing tongue twisters and rhymes. I'm glad the teacher noticed. And another that says, I have two primary school kids in speech path each fortnightly session. Each child is $210, over $800 a month for so many months. I'm looking forward to some of those rebates. And others just talking about how beneficial it was to have those the assistance and to have people call it out really early and to have that help sort of pre 5 years of age. So if you've just joined us, there are changes to being to how you can get your rebate, your Medicare rebate for speech pathology. Go to Speech Pathology Australia. It's got all of the information there. But yeah, as I said, it's under the age of 25. But you might be able to pop your hand up for one of those 28 sessions over the course of a lifetime. That's it for today. Thanks for listening. Take care, and we'll speak to you soon.